Each piece tells a story, each dent a scar. Lost in rubble, but never too far. I'll keep searching no matter how long. Mining memories in an old wrecking yard. Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome in the Church of Internal Combustion. All we ask is that you show up with an open heart. I'm excited to talk about one of my favorite people today, and one of the best summers of my young teenage life. I had to examine the reasons why, which got a little difficult on the back end. But before we get too deep, let's thank our sponsors for bringing the show here today. Of course, this is Jack. Yeah, he wants, well, that's not Jack. That's Jack's comic book called Track Tales. He wants to give away some of his comics. It's like Calvin Hobbes meets 70s car culture. It's really cool. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Anything gets kids in the cars, I'm about, you know. And I was a comic book kid growing up, and I think it's pretty cool. But if you email your address to his email address right here, jacksavvynews@gmail.com, he's going to send you some free comics and stuff like that. And we're going to try to get the word out about old Jack and make a little buzz about his art, things he's making him out. You can also follow him at Happy Jack Savinka 5560 here on YouTube, and it'll have a... there's a community post on his page. It kind of tells all the rules and stuff to what he's doing with his comics. So, but check him out. Go check out his page. See what he's got going on over there. I think it's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting. I've got a copy of it that I've enjoyed. All right. And also, we're brought to you this week by the Everyone Racers podcast. It's a podcast about amateur endurance. I'm about to go hook up with these guys here in the very beginning of November. I'm going to a amateur endurance race with them called 24 Hours of Lemons, and I'm really excited about it. Their podcast is a lot of fun. It's stories about the track and about racing and about all the stuff they do. Sometimes they team up. Sometimes they go off and do other stuff. I've been a fan of it. It's one of my favorites on long drives. I like to listen to it. So check it out, Everyone Racers podcast, and thank them for bringing the Wrecking Yard here today. This is, y'all probably can't see it. I don't know. This is a new, you notice some things have changed. We've got, after today, we've got 10 more episodes of this format. And then I'm going to start doing some interviews with some guests and stuff. And I got some people lined up, and I'm really excited about some really interesting people with really interesting stories. It's still going to be a bunch of stories and stuff like that. The format's not going to change that much. Just there's going to be somebody else here with me some of the time. And we're going to do some other stuff, like mess with Mom's Volkswagen. Oh, my God. So, my cousin and his guys drug it out of the woods for me today. I wasn't able to get up there, but they drug it out of the woods for me today and brought it up by his shop. And, whoo, I made a joke the other day and told somebody else their project was a Homerian Odyssey. But, holy shit, my project is a Homerian Odyssey. That car is beat to piss, you know. So we'll see if it becomes a car again or an art project. Here's some photos of it. And honestly, after seeing it from this angle, I don't know how my mother survived that car accident. She was really short, though. Maybe that's it. If my dad had been in there, I think it had killed him. That's a nasty hit. So, but I got my hammer arm strong, and I'm going to call up my buddy old Thomas Bendon, and I'm going to ask him, we can't use some of his pneumatic jaws of life, and maybe he can give me some guidance. Somebody's got one portable. I know you can rent a portable thing like that. I've messed with them a few times. Anyways, I'm crap at body work, but it's just as good a thing to practice on as any. Man, I don't even know if y'all can see this because of the new camera setup. My wife, she's always finding me things that she knows I love, and she got me this mouse. My computer, it's, you know, a little red VW bug, and the headlights come on while you use it, and by God, if it just ain't the cutest damn thing I ever seen in my life, I love it. Yeah, yeah, man. So the Volkswagen is out. We're going to be doing some different stuff here. But like I said, we got 10 more episodes, this 10 more weeks of this before I wrap up this portion of it. But still going to be here. Still going to try to be here every Sunday. I may not be in the chat as much today because my kid is singing and I'm going to a performance, but I'm still going to try to monitor it from the performance. But my kid got asked to go perform, big performance in the park, and I ain't going to miss that, man. Yeah. There we go. I mean, a little project. I like having this more space, though, and it'll still work out right when I got some people here to visit with me and such, and I got some more chairs, and I'll just have my guest come in that door right there, and that, I think that'll be fun. It'd be like Mr. Rogers type shit. The car I picked today belonged to my cousin Shane. And Shane's really, as far as men and fathers go, I put a lot of stock in Shane. I put Shane above a lot of people. Got 5 kids. I feel like him and his wife have done a really good job. But he's one of those people I hold a little higher. I think he's better than a lot of us. He's a middle kid too, you know, like, so, but we're going to talk about it. That car belonged to him. From the time we moved to Houston till I was about 14, I spent every summer in the wrecking yard. Excuse me. Staying with Granny and Papa all summer. And pretty much fairly unsupervised, except for my grandmother. But I just pretty much lived out in the rec yard, did whatever I wanted to do, shot BB guns, rode mini bikes, and had myself a pretty good old time, but always by myself. There weren't a lot of kids out there. I had one little friend I'd see every once in a while, but there just weren't a lot of kids out there then, so I was mostly just me and my dog, or me by myself. But right before, so my birthday's in the summer, so I finished the school year at 14. I turned 15 during the summer in July. So right before I turned 14, no, right before the summer when I was 14, right if we got out of school, my mom's birthday is in January. And Papa Clark, his mom was one of the worst people on the planet. She was not a good person. She was a mean-spirited old barfly heifer, and she was just an old battle axe. She wasn't mean. She never did nothing good by nobody, as far as I can tell. Maybe. She liked one of my aunts. She did a lot for her, but she decided to... At my mother's birthday party, 30th birthday party, she decided, Nana is what we called her. Her name was Alma. She decided, because she was pissed about some stuff, to let everybody know at the party, including my mother as an adult who did not know, but maybe kind of suspected, that her father wasn't her father. Alma decided to drop that bomb in front of friends and family, and everybody embarrassed my mother and, of course, hurt her feelings. And it also led to a huge, huge fight between Granny and my mom about Granny basically lying to her whole life and various other things. And, you know, when you're a kid and the adults fight, you don't know everything that's going on. You don't know all the reasons. But I accidentally, not accidentally, I was a sneaky little shit. I read a letter my mother wrote my grandmother. And she told my grandmother a lot of things that I didn't know about. Including things about the man she was raised to believe was her father. And stuff her mom didn't back her up on and didn't take care of her. It was a long time before they made any kind of amends with each other. But like I said, up until that point, I would go to Granny and Papa's house every summer. Well, my mother and Granny were fighting, and she wouldn't even talk to Papa because she was so mad at him about everything. And so that summer, they decided I would spend the summer with the Longmire side of my family. They still wanted me out of the house for the summer. So I spent most of that summer at my Uncle Larry and my Aunt Barbara's house. My Uncle Larry, you've heard me talk about him before. He's basically my Uncle Larry. A lot of, if you've ever watched the Shop Talk series, and we're about to start kicking some of those off again, but if you ever watch that series, Uncle is largely based on Uncle Larry. My Uncle Larry was the best mechanic around, hands down. He was a Vietnam vet. He went off to the Army and went and served his country in Vietnam and saw some rough stuff and did his job and came home and came back home to his wife and his family and then just spent the rest of his life working for them. And he really was that guy. He was the dude, like, I always make all the jokes about him working on the church bus, but that's really, if it hadn't been for him, First United Pentecostal Church, Kilgore, Texas, wouldn't have had no church bus, because Uncle Larry kept that thing running on hopes and prayers and whatever parts the church could afford to buy. He was a man of service. He was a man that gave service to others and took care of people. Me and him didn't always agree about stuff, but man, I always felt like he had my back. My Uncle Larry was great, man. I think about him all the time. Him and my Aunt Barbara, you'd never find two more perfectly matched people in the world. And they fussed all the time. They fussed like the honeymooners. She'd tell him all the time she's going to kick him to the moon. Now, Uncle Larry's a pretty big old guy, but Aunt Barbara, man, she's about 5 foot nothing. She's a little Cajun lady. But boy, you didn't want to get on the wrong side of her. Let me tell you something. I saw her, I saw my Aunt Barbara yell at a state trooper until he tore up a ticket one time. Just yell at the state trooper on the side of the road until he tore his ticket up, explaining to him why she had to drive so fast. Like, she, woo. You are going to get over on her. She's tough. She loved me. And Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara took in strays. They liked having me around. They'd take me in. Only thing was you had to go to church with them. You know. You had to play by their rules. They were Pentecostal. They were devout Pentecostal. And I was raised in it, so it wasn't really all that, you know. It wasn't that crazy of an extreme for me. I look back on a lot of it now and I'm like, oof. But when you stay at somebody else's house, you got to play by the rules. That's just the way it is. But they always took great care of me. And they, like I said, they took me and Tommy LaBeouf in, and we were teenagers and I was running around that El Camino and they always made sure I had a place to sleep and, you know, and man, Barbara's, you know, they were people that I loved dearly. They passed away within, I don't know the exact dates. I'm probably going to butcher this, but my Uncle Larry died in 2017, I think in May or March. I know me and Rachel and the kids went up for the funeral and everything. And then about a month later, Aunt Barbara died. She had a heart attack and died. But she was so grief stricken. The longest they had ever been apart was when he went to Vietnam, and they were never apart that long again, ever. I mean, they were a tight knit unit, and they had three kids. They had my cousin Dwayne's the oldest. He's kind of the crazy wild one. He's done a bunch of wild mess in his time. Their middle son, Shane, I think he's 51. He's like 4 or 5 years older than me. And then my cousin Amy, who's the baby, and she's real close to my age. I think she's just maybe a year or two younger than me. We're pretty close age. Me and Amy spent a ton of time growing up. together, riding bikes and singing gospel songs, that kind of thing, and running around together. Me and Amy still to this day have a very close relationship. Me and Shane to this day, though we don't see each other often, when we do see each other, it feels, I don't know, just feels like me and Shane. But my Uncle Larry and my Aunt Barbara were amazing people. Did they have flaws? Sure, just like everybody does. But they were good people. They were, a lot of people have hang-ups about Christianity and stuff, but when I think of like good Christian people or like how they're supposed to be, I think of them. And the way they took people in and tried to help people and really put their money where their mouth was when it came to that kind of thing. Now, if I remember the story correctly, the way Shane got that Camaro was they were on a trip to Arkansas or something. They were driving down the road and they seen that Camaro on the side of the road, and Shane begged his mom and dad. He was just about driving age, begged his mom and dad to stop, let him look at it. I think maybe it was in Carthage or something. And he seen that Camaro. You know how it is when you see a car. Like, let's just talk about that for a minute. You know, it doesn't matter how many cars you've had in your life. Every time you see a car you want for the first time, one that you're going to buy, there's a feeling. You know, it's a rush. It's almost like a euphoric rush that takes over you. Some people may get that about shoes or guns or whatever. Everybody's got different stuff they're into. But for me, it's always been cars. There's that moment right before it's yours, that anticipatory. It's still one of my favorite things. I still love buying cars because of that moment. That moment, like, I'm about to make this mine. It's going to be mine. Shane had to have that car. They wanted $500 for that Camaro. And Shane had enough money, I think, saved up to buy that car. The motor was junk in it. I think it originally had a 305 in it. It was a Rally Sport, 78 Rally Sport Camaro. And it was kind of gray. It was primer gray. It wasn't the prettiest thing in the world, but he cleaned it up. And but he had to have it. You know how that goes. He seen that car, he had to have it. And so him and Uncle Larry went and made a deal with the guy, and on their way back to Arkansas, they hooked that car up and drug it on home. And he worked on it for a long time, man. I remember several times. I always have this one image I got this image that's burned into my brain. And I'm about 13 or 14, and we're over at the house, me and my dad. And Uncle Larry and Shane are rebuilding the 350. They're going to put in that Camaro. And remember, Uncle Larry had orange RTV, and the way he was putting it on looked so beautiful. I mean, he was just skilled. He'd done this type of work for a very long time. Very good at what he did. And he could talk to you and have a conversation with you while he did this work absentmindedly. And when they got that engine in that car, that was a hot Sun 50, all right? I mean, you know, you can't compare stuff back then with the way things are now. There's a lot more technology. We know a lot more about displacement and how to achieve power and how to achieve efficiency with engines that we didn't know in those days. Or people were just figuring out. Only really rich people were figuring it out. But there were guys around when I was growing up that could build an engine, and they knew how to get as much power as possible out of it at the time period. And that 350 was hot. I'm sure it's probably bored over with a little bit of a cleanup bore. Damn. I got stung by something. But that thing would run, buddy. I mean, shame and mash that gas. That old car would just squat and get it, man. Wasn't much squealing tires. He could burn out if he wanted to. He had some big old fat 60 series on the back. And that thing would hook up and go, man. And Shane loved that car. He looked so natural in it, man. I wish I had some pictures of him in that car. Because I never, he, I really think, man, a lot of the reason I love cars is because of the summer I spent with Shane in that Camaro. And I'm not a Camaro guy, funny enough. You know, I don't really care for Camaros at all. I'm not either. You're 67, all the Camaros, everybody just goes gaga over. I got no, they don't do shit for me. I owned a third gen Camaro for a little bit. And I had one I borrowed for a little bit that I was working on doing a bunch of work for somebody. Fun enough to drive, but I never liked the way they look. I'm not into Camaros, but the F-body cars hold a special place in my heart because I just think it's one of the cool. Those are my favorite Trans Ams, and those are my favorite Camaros. Are those, you know, late 70s to early 80s? Oh, that is, to me, that's peak. It's peak design right there for a muscle car. I just love the way those cars look. Trans Ams, woo, buddy. A little project here. Got more room to work on it. I'm excited about that. Do a little cleanup. I got me some clock parts. I can put a little clock together and hang it up somewhere in my new setup. Me and Shane were pretty close when we were younger. I mean, I spent the night over there a lot and hung out. And even though he was older than me, Shane's like was the best one out of all of us. I still think that. He didn't like fussing, you know, and arguing and stuff like that. When that stuff would start, he would just back out of it. You know, he just didn't want to. Not that he didn't have the fortitude to deal with it. He just didn't care for it. He didn't want to be around that kind of stuff. He was just a good dude, man. Just a straight, you know, he worked hard. I don't know what his grades were like in school. I know it wasn't his favorite thing, but I know everything I ever seen the dude do, he was successful at. You know. From mechanic work, being a father, being a husband. He was a good person to learn from and be exposed to, especially at this time in my life. When you're 14, 15, you need some people with some roots to show you what life's about. And he had those. And me and him, like when I would spend the night, we'd read comic books. We loved Conan. And he's who got me into X-Men. He liked the X-Men classic and all the comic books. And we'd also sit there and go through the Jegs and J.C. Whitney and the Summit magazines. You know, we got all of them. They used to get all that stuff. Their parents had Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara had a store for a little while with a little arcade in it. And Dwayne and Shane could beat anybody at any video game because they had unlimited access to these back when you had the big cabinet arcade games. And you couldn't touch them on those games because they'd get home from school, walk over to the store and play games all afternoon in the game room. You know, they were real good at it. And I haven't spoken much about my upbringing in the church, but the Pentecostal church is, we're UPC, it's United Pentecostal Church, and it's a whole organization, and it's a really strict upbringing. You know, men aren't allowed to have long hair. Men aren't allowed to have facial hair. Women aren't allowed to cut their hair. Women weren't allowed to wear anything that rose above their ankles. They weren't allowed to wear pants. They weren't allowed to wear jewelry, makeup, all that kind of stuff. Being Pentecostal really hard if you're a woman. I mean, it sucks if you're a dude, but I shouldn't say it sucks. I'm not here to knock anybody else's boobs. I want to be clear about that. Though I don't believe those things anymore and follow those tenets in my life, I don't knock. I'm sometimes envious of the people I know who are still in it and seem to have a firm and secure grasp and belief every morning when they get up of what's going to happen at the end of things. And I don't have that, you know. Sometimes I'm a little jealous of it. Wish I could go back to that. But being in the UPC was more than just religion. Don't get me wrong. I did my fair share of getting crossways about the religion part of it as I got older, but it was like a family. You know, that church was like part of my family. All those people in that church were like family members, Sister Tolliver. And, but you know, you may hear me use their names in shop talk just as a kind of a ode and tribute to them. The Mitchell family was, they were like family, you know. I still talk to one of their kids, Clint Mitchell, who's much older than me, but I still talk to Clint Mitchell pretty regularly, you know. They were family. You felt a part of something. And when we moved to Houston, I lost that. And so when you get a chance to get it back, you cling to it, you know, because it was the only thing I knew for a very long time. You know, I think it's why I went back to it in my late teens too, you know, and my early 20s. I have yo-yoed and struggled with religion and faith most of my adult life. Less so now as I get older, because I seem... The one thing that I know these days is the older I get, the less I'm sure about anything. In fact, the older I get, the more I'm certain that I'm not certain about a damn thing. But I do know outside of the religion stuff, it was a familiar relationship. Those people were our family. We spent a lot of time at the church, and my parents were the Bible quiz coaches, so they spent a lot of time. We spent a lot of time traveling because our Bible quiz team was on point. Mom and Dad was running a good team. So we spent a lot of time traveling with the Bible quiz team. And, you know, that was just when you go from that to nothing, then it's, you know, we went to some churches in Houston and stuff, but it was never the same. Those people already had their church family. Sorry. Yeah. Got stoned by something. Ooh, it's weeping. But when you're young, having that kind of support system around you feels good. And it especially helps when you're in a religion that has strong rules that don't allow you to be like the other kids. So it's good that you have kids that, you know, your cousins and stuff, that they're all doing the same deal. They know the vibe. That summer was one of my favorite summers ever. I can tell you what happened that summer. I spent most of the summer with Shane in that Camaro. You know, there's always a reason to go get on the road and go run the roads, you know, as long as you had a little gas money. And back then, a little gas didn't cost you all that much, you know. I mean, I think gas when I graduated high school was like $1.06, $1.05 a gallon. You know, it's not crazy cheap, but we thought it was expensive at the time. It wasn't until after 9/11 happened that I realized how expensive gas could get, you know. But boy, we ran them roads, man. We had a good time doing it. Shane wasn't shy about putting his foot off in that thing. It was the first kind of fast car I'd experienced as a teenager, you know, and I wasn't driving yet. I was almost driving age, you know. I was going to get my learner's permit when I got back to Houston and all that good stuff, but I was just still a little young for that. But when your cousin's got a cool car and you always got a place to go, you know. Boy, we had some fun in that machine. I always say this. I was in an interview recently and I was talking to some people and they were talking about the origins of what made me want to do stand-up comedy. And I don't know 100% all the answers to that, but what I can tell you I mean, one of the things, me and my grandmother used to listen to Jonathan Winters and Bill Cosby and stuff like that when I was young, but Shane turned me on to Jerry Clower. I didn't know who Jerry Clower was, and Shane was really into Jerry Clower, and he had a couple of tapes of Jerry Clower's, and we would drive around that Camaro and listen to Jerry Clower and just crack up, you know. Shoot up in here amongst us. One of us got to have some relief. That's still one of my favorite stories. Knock him out, John. You know, like, sometimes I think maybe Shane was just as instrumental in me becoming a comedian as anybody was, because he turned me on to this guy who shaped everything about the way I tell stories and the way I do my craft. You know, I know there's lots of little factors that came to play during all that, but, you know, definitely think Shane was heavily tied into that, of why I ended up becoming the person I became. Because, and I still listen to Jerry Clower. I still love everything the old man did, for sure, you know. I'm trying to figure this out. Let's see. Big M has a big hole. Man, am I going to have to drill these out? That's going to suck. Sure enough, I'm not going to fit in there. I'm not 100% sure that's true. Well, looky, looky. Yeah? Mm-hmm. These are good times, man. Riding around the car with my buddy. At the time, I still hadn't been exposed to a lot of things music-wise. I wasn't at an age yet where I had figured out what I liked. I was still, you know, still young and pretty fresh off church music. There was some pop and stuff I dug, but I didn't really have any, like, oh, this is my music. This is what I listen to. You know, it wasn't like that for me yet. I'm going to have to paint that little piece or something. It is cool. I don't think I'm going to put the second one in. Let's see if she works. I'm not seeing a battery over here. So hell. There it is. Oh yeah, man, we'd drive around and listen. I didn't have music I was into, you know. I listened to my parents' music. I listened to, you know, the little things I was exposed to. But, you know, Shane was older. He was cooler. I think that's the year he graduated high school. And, Shane it's ticking. Set that up aside. I thought that was going to take longer. I may go back and paint that second hand, put that second hand in there. It looks kind of cool. Sorry, I got a little distracted there. Squirrel. Shane turned me on to Aerosmith, man. And to this day, Aerosmith is still one of my favorite bands of all time. I've seen them probably 4 or 5 times live. And I'm glad I did, because it sounds like Steven Tyler ain't going to be singing no more. But Shane turned me on to Aerosmith, and I don't remember. I think it's a great. I tried to look for it on iTunes the other night because I was thinking about him. I wanted to listen to that music again. And I started digging around, and I couldn't find the exact album he had. I think it was the Greatest Hits. I can tell you all the songs on it, but I think it was the Greatest Hits. And it was just a cassette tape, and I never heard no music like that. Back in the Saddle. I mean, you have to put it in perspective. You're in a 78 Camaro, and you're going down Highway 42 at about 100 miles an hour, and you hear Last Child. Let me tell you, you'll never hear Last Child like that ever again. I'm a last child. That Camaro just... I think it run 120 miles an hour like it wasn't nothing. Boy, you come up Laird Hill in just a minute. You know what I'm talking about? You could move and groove with that car. That car, and Shane knew how to drive it, man. He loved that car. He was completely in tune with that machine. And at the time, so him and his mom and dad and, you know, the family, they lived over off in Kilgore, this little place called Rabbit Creek. And Shane started courting. And Pentecostal people don't really date. You court. You go hang out. You hold hands. You go to tent revivals together, stuff like that. That's how you hook up Pentecostal girls. I mean, that's the basics. That's the nuts and bolts of it. It's really strict, though, you know. But he was kind of seeing this little gal. I don't remember. I think her name was Autumn. And she lived way out there past my granny going towards Overton on Highway 42. And I don't know how much gas he burned up running out there and coming back, but it was a lot, and I was kind of their, you know, I was kind of his little third wheel. I'd run around with him, go to church events with him and stuff. And he had a pretty big old crush on little old gal and was, you know, he was courting her pretty hard. Old Shane was putting the moves. He was putting a good old boy on her. He was trying to win that girl over, and they saw each other most of that summer, and she wasn't the right one for him, right, because he found his right one. But they saw each other, and she did something kind of mean, and she hurt that dude, man. But it was good to see all that, like, because I had never had a relationship at that point. I mean, I was into girls, but I didn't know, you know, exactly what that all entailed. And it was good to see him go through that, because then I understood, like, I mean, she crushed him, and then he, you know, he lost a bunch of weight. He come back from it, you know. He took it on the chin. He dealt with it. He come back from it. He was a tough kid. You know, and I was, you know, the thing is, when people from high school and stuff like that are like, oh, I'm not surprised you're a comedian, you're always funny. I don't get that, because I always felt like a shy, awkward, quiet kid at school. But around my family, I definitely was the funny one. They all thought I was a hoot, and I used to keep them laughing. And as long as I kept everybody laughing, everybody wanted me around, and I was like that, you know? And so I was always the funny one, you know, cracking jokes and stuff like that. And but Shane could be funny too, man. He'd get you. Shane hit Tommy LaBeouf. It's one of the funniest things I ever seen in my life. One day we was over at Shane's house, and we were changing the rear end on a old square body Chevrolet pickup. It was one of, we probably had about seven of them between us all. And we was changing his rear end out in this old square body pickup, and Shane's under there, and I'm down there with him, and we're trying to move the rear end, lift the rear end. And we hear old Tommy LaBeouf at the time had old blue square body pickup. He pulls up, and he gets out of his truck and comes strolling up the driveway. Me and Shane down there grunting and trying to get this rear end lifted into place. And old Tommy, what you doing, Shane? Shane don't say shit. Because we're down there grunting and trying to move that rear end around. And Tommy sort of shuffles and walks around the truck a little bit and come back. What you doing, Shane? What you doing down there? Shane still don't say shit. We're down there grunting and working on that truck. And then Tommy kind of leaned down in the fender well. Hey, Shane, what you doing? And Shane hollered out, I'm eating ice cream, Tommy. You want some? It was funny to me. I almost peed on myself under the truck. We damn near dropped the rear end. Tommy and Paco. I'm sorry, I was just trying. Shane didn't fuss like that. He didn't get real hot at people. Now, he did, I will tell you this one time, he did throw a glass of piss at a dude that was bullying him one time and break it on the guy. Like, legit. I don't remember how old he was. I think he was like 12 or 13. And some of the older boys from the church that were his older brother's age, they were all goofing off out in the yard. And one of them was picking at him and wouldn't let off. Kept picking. His name was Nathan. He kept picking at Shane. And he was Mr. Big Stud athlete guy. And, you know, he kept picking at Shane. And I guess hurt his feelings at some point. And Shane went and got... I'm sure everybody's parents had these glasses, but they kind of like multifaceted, big, thick glass mugs with a handle on them. It seemed like everybody had these glasses in the 80s. And Shane went and grabbed one of them glasses, went off behind a tree and peed in it, and then come back out there and chucked it right at Nathan's head, man, and it hit him in the arm, busted, and he ended up having to get stitches. And of course, you got to clean stitches out pretty good when there's piss in them. But I'm telling you, he was the calm, quiet one. He was not the one, but he just had enough of that boy picking at him that day, you know, and just said, I'm going to put a stop to this. And he always was that dude. He would. There was a limit to what you were going to. He was fearless. Shane's fearless. I will tell you this. I had a job interview one time in Kilgore, and I didn't have a car at the time. My car was broke down, and Shane had a Suzuki street bike. And I said, Shane, can I borrow your motorcycle and go to my job interview? He said, yeah, I can, man. Come over, man. I'll get it fired up for you and you can borrow whatever you want. Well, I get over and pick up that Suzuki and there ain't no throttle on it. I said, how do you operate the throttle? He said, oh, I got a string on the carburetor down here. And Shane been riding this thing around for 3 months, shifting it, running the throttle down here off a string, riding that motorcycle all over town. Hadn't wrecked it one damn time, you know, just fearless, man. You know, that boy didn't have no backup in him. He just wasn't that kind of fella, you know. He's stout as his dad was, man. My Uncle Larry wasn't going to take too much crap off nobody either. Shane's the same way. Now, Dwayne was a little more aggressive, always looking to get in some shit. And Amy, their youngest sister, she might be the meanest one of them all. I love her, but boy, that gal had a mean streak 10 feet wide when he was growing up. She was probably the scariest one of them all. But Shane didn't take no crap, man. He didn't take no guff. He was stout, you know. And people respected him. He's a good dude. He worked hard. He was a mechanic at the college for years, you know, rebuilding Crown Vic intakes. And the dude was very good at what he did. He's probably today as an adult one of the better people I know when it comes to mechanical. Things like as far as his intelligence level and his ability to do those things, I don't think you'll find many people that can compete with him. I don't think you'll find a whole lot of men that measure up against him, really, in a lot of metrics. He's a hell of a trumpet player, man. Hell of a trumpet. Oh boy, could bang a trumpet, man. I've seen him just beat it down, and he heck of a great musician. He's funny in his own way. I remember one time after I think this was that summer probably, and but you know, they're Pentecostal, they didn't curse a lot, and they didn't really like that kind of language and stuff. But I've been in Houston around a bunch of foul mouth kids at school and stuff, and so. We were all sitting around the table. We would all end up sitting around my Aunt Barbara's bar every night. And you just never knew who was going to come in and everything. It was just like a bar top in the middle of her kitchen. And she always, my Aunt Barbara was a caterer, and she was the head chef for the college. And so there was always leftovers. She had the best chicken dumplings in the world. Always leftovers. Aunt Barbara always had food over there. So you're going to eat. You know, you're going to eat good. There's a reason all that side of my family and me are big as we are. And I think half of us ain't Barbara. That woman could throw down, man. And we'd all hang around there at night, and we'd cut up and tell stories and laugh. Same thing you and me are doing here right now. One night Shane said something. Shane popped some little quip off at me and got me, you know, cooked me a little bit. And I started laughing and I went, ha ha ha, fudge you. I'm not going to say that on the podcast, but I said, ha, F you. And Shane goes, uh-uh. I'll never forget this, boy. He jumped right up out of that chair. Uh-uh. Not me, buddy. Not me. That may be what y'all do in Houston, but you ain't doing that to me. Not my house. We're gonna tolerate that kind of talk. I really think that summer with him was a big reason why I decided, you know, I don't have any great stories about that summer. It was just constantly us in that car running around doing stuff. Me learning really what kind of freedom a car gave you. And most of what we were doing was church events. I mean, we were racing and stuff, you know, on back roads at night, but we weren't out drinking beer. We were teens. We weren't out getting into trouble like that. We were just having a good time in an old beat up Camaro that was fast as hell, listening to some Sinner music. I felt like we were breaking law, like we were doing something wild. But most of what me and Shane did was pretty harmless, but we had a good time doing it. But I really think this summer is the reason I ended up moving back to Kilgore when I graduated high school. Because I wanted to be back a part of my church family and I mostly wanted to be around Shane and Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara. Uncle Larry was contrary, you know. A lot of people had big opinions, and they would try to rile him up about vehicles and Chevrolet and Ford and all this. And he never would let anybody get under his skin about it, man. It just didn't matter what you said. He was going to have the opposite opinion, you know. I try to portray him that way in the Shop Talk series because he is funny. He'd get over on my Papa Longmire like nobody's business. Nobody ever get over on Papa like Uncle Larry could. Uncle Larry would torment that old man when he felt like the old man was being out of line and just never let off. But he would just say, I remember one time, I think it was my dad and it was a couple of the other dads were complaining about the fact that cars didn't have gauges in them anymore. They had idiot lights. And of course, all went around the circle and Uncle Larry, the only one in the circle who actually made his living every day of his life, tuning and working on cars, sat there kind of quiet while all these men pissed and moaned about idiot lights and how much they've missed gauges and how good cars used to be back when they had gauges in the dash. And Uncle Larry let it go around the circle and he would sit there kind of like this. Here you go. He's always drumming them fingers. You know, I don't really care for gauges. No. I like that old idiot light. Just let me know when there's a problem. You know, problem with them gauges is, you know, you go drive that car today, you look at that gauge, boy, that car running about 120 degrees. That's the way a car ought to run. And then he said, then tomorrow a car might run 130 or 140. And then you'd be like, well, you'll be worried about it all day long. Look at that gauge. Why is the car running hot today? No, not for me, man. I just prefer to know when there's a problem, then I'll fix the problem. And he shut down everybody. All these dudes yapping and bumping their gums about their big opinions about cars. And here's the one guy who was making his living working on cars come in and just shut them down. They were waiting for him to agree with them. And no, I don't care nothing about that. I can still remember that way that Camaro felt when Shane would get into it. I mean, that whole body would twist up on that car, and it was like a freaking rocket, man. I swear, we come over that hill on 42 a couple times fast enough. I felt like we'd come off the ground a little bit. And we got beat by the law a couple times, but, you know. You know, it was just different back then. You had the radios, you know, they had Motorola by then, but they weren't real good at using it yet. And you get out there on them back roads out there in East Texas, all them little old lease roads connected everything. And if you know what roads connect everything, you can disappear. You can just go off the radar if you need to. And when you come down Highway 42, like going back into Kilgore, used to be one of these little old lease roads that they kind of joined like that. This road come down out of a hill and it joined like that into Highway 42, like right at the top of a big old, I think it's Larry Deal right there on 42. And then that road arched back off in the woods back here, wandered around and went all around pasture land, all that stuff. There was right of ways and everything's piney woods, big tall pine trees everywhere. Now, I remember one night, every once in a while, a state trooper would sit down there right across from Leverage Chapel School, and he would sit there and post up. Used to be a little store there, and he would sit there and post up where that little store was and run his radar. And he beeped us a couple times we seen him slow down, you know. But one night, we was coming back from that old gal's house, and Shane had to hammer down, boy. We was moving, grooving. Aerosmith. At the top, you know, high as that old radio could go, old JVC, banging, baby, just flying down the highway. I don't know how fast we're going, but I know it was over 100. And when we passed that state trooper, we passed him so fast, I think it shocked him too, like he didn't know what to do. But then, like, in the background, I was looking in the window, you could see all this dust and crap stir up. He was peeling out, trying to get out of that parking lot and get back up, get on the highway. And we got right up where the top of that hill was, and Shane just locked the brakes up on that Camaro. And we slid to a stop right past where that little road come down. And Shane throw that booger in reverse and just back straight up that road. We stopped, and it went up a little hill, too. We kind of stopped at the top of that hill. And about that time, we had the windows down, you know. We had no AC. About that time, here come that state trooper, that Mustang. And we heard him pass that road, and then we heard his brakes lock up. Much farther down the hill, though. Shane whipped that Camaro around, man, and he pulled right up there into the woods. There was a little cutaway and a little cutoff, you know, what they call it, right-of-way, where the power lines run and whatnot. And Shane just turned down that right-of-way and pulled off in some trees and turned the lights off on that car. And we sit there. And I remember we were sitting there real still, real quiet, no radio. You hear that old motor ticking. Cooling down. Yeah, we heard that Mustang. Coming up that hill. You know, figured it out. Boy, he come up that hill so fast, I don't know how he made the curve on top, but he shot past us like, he never suspected for a minute that's where we were. Way off down that road. Shane gave about 10, 15 minutes. We didn't see no lights coming either way. He eased back out of the woods. Then we eased on into Kilgore, you know, and got back to his mom and daddy's house and shut that car down for the night. I got old lawman pulled him over a couple weeks later. Like, I know it was you the other night, but he couldn't prove nothing. You know, it was back before they had all the cameras and, you know, all the gadgetry they got now for catching us. I told you not to worry about Shane getting his heart broke because she wasn't the one for him, man. He found the one. There was a family at our church called the Sullivans. And they're pretty good old folks. And they had their oldest daughter was a gal named Julie Sullivan. And Julie is, honest to God, one of my favorite people. A lot of the time her and Shane dated, I was their third wheel and I would hang out. And, you know, I had a crush on her younger sister. For a long time, but nothing came of it. She didn't like me back or whatever, but so I would hang around them and I'd go over to Sullivan's house and everything because I was kind of sweet on the younger sister. But Julie was always so damn kind to me, and nobody ever Nobody ever made Shane beam and smile like Julie did. That girl was everything in the world. I was in her wedding, and she was everything in the world to him. I never seemed as happy as I ever did in my life the day he married that girl. And I still love seeing them today. Like I said, they got 5 kids, and their kids are great, and some of their kids are having families now. And I did a comedy show up East Texas last year, and they got to come out, and I got to spend some time with them and their son, their oldest daughter, who I just adore them. I don't know the kids that well, but I just adore them. Their oldest son reminds me of young Shane. You know, like I can't look at him, not see my little cousin, you know, my big cousin when I was a kid growing up. But they've done right by them kids, you know. They have a good life. They take vacations, and their kids are nice people, you know, and seem to have good lives too. And Shane has always found a way to provide. And Julie became a nurse, and she's just a legit badass these days. She birthed babies. She'd take care of it all, man. Julie's bad to the bone. And my mother loved Julie dearly. I always felt like they were really close. And Julie is one of the people who reminds me of all the good things that I miss about my mom. Julie has all those characteristics. She's that kind of mom, and she's that kind of aunt, and she's that kind of cousin, and she's that kind of friend. She has all the best parts of my mom. I am often reminded of when I see Julie or talk to Julie. And I love that, you know, he found, I'm telling you, guy was a good example. Like, he's been a good dude his whole life. He's just a good man, you know. You don't run across a lot of those anymore, it seems like. Everybody's divorced or throwing in the towel or don't want to take care of the kids or whatever. But then you got this guy over here who's just doing the job all day long, every day, and glad to be doing it. Uncle Larry tried to talk me into staying, you know. I got in a bunch of trouble. We'll talk about that another time. But I got in a bunch of trouble in high school and just about had decided to drop out my junior year. And it was after my meemaw had died. And I was going to drop out, and I was going to go live with Papa Longmire and get me a job in Kilgore and just go on. And when I did end up moving up there and decided to leave, Uncle Larry sure tried to talk me into staying. I think he knew I was headed down a rough path. He would, Uncle Larry would find out I was singing in the beer joint with Uncle Bobby, and he'd go there, sit in the parking lot, wait for me to come out of the beer joint, make me come home, go to bed. So I could go to church the next day. Uncle Larry, he was a good shepherd. And he looked out for his people. I remember when they buried him, the preacher compared him to David in the Bible, and I thought it was a really apt comparison because it was that he was a soldier and a man of service. And I always thought that was a really cool thing. But I think even though Shane wasn't a soldier, Shane didn't go to war or anything like that, but he's a man of service. He's a man that does right by his people, does good things for others. What else you want? He left an impression on me. He certainly left me with a love of cars. You couldn't hang around that kid all summer and read Jegs magazine all summer and Summit and not be dreaming. And when I got my first car, Shane helped me work on it. Shane taught me how to change the oil in my truck. First time I did it by myself, Shane walked me through it. And that's a... I'll save that story for that truck because that's a pretty good story, but... I thought he was cool and I wanted to be like him, and cars were his thing. And I just was like, all right, I'm with you. Cars are cool. Cars, X-Men, Aerosmith, still things, Jerry Clower, 4 things I still love today very much. Cause my cool older cousin turn me on to these things. I told you he was a trumpet player. My meemaw was killed in a car wreck October 24th, 1995, is my senior year of high school. And it was the first blow any of us kids in my little family took. We hadn't lost anybody yet. You know, all our people were still around. But when we lost Meemaw, it was a hard blow. I was 18. Shane was probably 23 or 20. We got to have her a long time. I'll never forget, man, getting out of the car with my dad at Meemaw and Papa's house, and Shane just come walking across the yard, grabbed me and hugged me like, man, like one of those hugs from somebody that makes you think, well, if he's upset about this, it's okay for me to be upset about it. I don't remember what the song was. They played a song on it. It was a Christian song on his trumpet for Meemaw when Meemaw passed at the church. And I will always picture him cheeks out, just blasting that trumpet and the most beautiful melody you ever heard. And tears streaming down his face as he played for his grandmother. He's a good dude, man. So some people are just good. They're just always going to be good. I tell you, he didn't like the fussing. He didn't like any of that stuff. He's kind of a stereotypical middle kid, you know. Didn't like to raise a fuss. Didn't like being involved in all that sort of thing. The other two were nuts, and I loved the youngest nutty one dearly, and I loved the oldest one too, even though he's crazier than shit. My cousin Dwayne is one I used to tell the story about. Dwayne became a police officer for a little while, and I'll share this story with y'all. It's one of my favorite Dwayne stories. My cousin Dwayne was a police officer in a little small town called New London, Texas. And I feel like I got to give you some context about Dwayne was at one time a Pentecostal preacher who went to Bible college. Chased women all over East Texas. He was wild, man. And Dwayne was a big hunter, man. And you would give Dwayne some grit. Dwayne hunted out of season a lot, but he didn't really care too much about hunting rules. And you bring him up to him, he'd say, that's man's law. That's not God's law. You know, he's one of these. You know, he was something else, boy. But he somehow, it's my opinion that it's easier to become a police officer than it should be. He became a police officer. And he was like the guy that was into karate and stuff when we were growing up. He was always training. And Dwayne gets his job as this New London police officer. And it's a small police department, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a couple times a week. This one old lady call him. And she's complaining about the neighbor's pigs blocking the road. Now, these big old full-grown domestic pigs, 300 or 400 pounds, big boys. You can't, you know, if they're standing in the way, they're in the way, right? But Dwayne gets called out to run these pigs out of the road. So he has to go out there and honk the car. And he's not doing police work. He's not feeling like he's doing police work. Well, I guess a week or two goes on, and this old lady keeps calling about these pigs being in the road, and Dwayne keeps talking. The guy owns pigs, and the guy won't keep his pigs put up. And yada, yada, yada. It's just back and forth. Goes on for a couple of weeks. And guess one day I caught Dwayne on the wrong day. He wasn't feeling too good about it. Dwayne pulled up in his cop car, and pigs was all over the road. And Dwayne pulled a 12-gauge out of the cop car, his service 12-gauge, and shot all 11 pigs, executed every one of them. And ended up, you know, getting some trouble for that as law enforcement. You can't just go around shooting people's livestock, you know, especially not in Texas. And they got him in court. They had a psychologist evaluate him. And he was telling us, he said, well, the thing the psychologist said is that I had a brief psychological break. Brief my ass, right? First of all, a shotgun only holds 6 shells, which means this was, and I know how animals work. If you shoot one animal, you take 12, take 11 of the dumbest animals in the world. Say you got 11 Cocker Spaniels. If you shoot one of them Cocker Spaniels, the other 10 Cocker Spaniels are going to run the hell off. So this wasn't a brief couple second psychological break. This was a 30-minute running, reloading, cursing, and swearing psychological breakdown. And if they don't run off and you shoot all the pigs, they're still in the road. Somebody still got moving pigs out of the road. That's Dwayne Longmire. I love him, but he's crazy as hell, man. God, that was a good song. It was, I look back on it with such fond memories. And like I said, most of it was just riding around in that car, but it all spurred stuff in me that changed who I was, having that time with my cousins growing up like that. And not everybody comes from, I come from a huge family, you know, both sides of my family, there's uncles and aunts and kids and cousins. I probably got about 20 or 30 cousins, I think, in the, you know, right there in just our immediate extended families. I really think Shane is a whole lot. You know, I talked about when I started this podcast about trying to figure out the things that make me a car guy. And I think Shane Longmire is a big part of that. I think my Uncle Larry is too. I don't think my Uncle Larry ever forgave me for leaving the church. Yeah, he always called me Junior. He's the person that called me Junior. And I don't think he ever forgave me for leaving the church. Last couple times I saw him when he was alive, he didn't seemed to have too much interest in bonding with me and whatnot. But, you know, I was living a wild, crazy, reckless life. And my Uncle Larry didn't care too much for Uncle Bobby. And he didn't think I needed to be running around with Bobby. He thought Bobby was trouble and nothing but trouble. And he was 100% right, you know. I debated on whether or not this is going to come up. And I'm just going to go through it briefly, and I'm not going to waste a lot of time on it because I'm not really ready to talk about it yet. What I did know, that I always remember this summer so fondly, and I don't remember, it's the summer I turned 15, the summer I went from 14 to 15, and it's a very fond summer for me, but what I didn't know at the time, or didn't remember at the time, this is weird, was from the time I was about 9 years old, the time I was probably about 13, I was being molested by a female entrusted with my care. Not my mom, my dad. And it was going on pretty regularly all summer. I didn't know it at this time, this summer I was having with Shane and them, but I know now the year before was the last year it happened to me. Last summer it happened to me. Last summer I spent at the wrecking yard. And if you've been paying attention, you probably know who it was. And I'm not really ready to get into all that yet. But I told y'all, after my mom passed, I thought I was going crazy. If you listen to that episode, you know, I told you, after my mom passed, I thought I was going crazy. I started having these weird dreams and just a little, I can't even really explain it to somebody. I have spoken to a therapist about it a good deal. Because like I told you, I thought I was going crazy, but I would have these dreams and these little flashes. And I was seeing things happen, but I didn't really understand what it was, and they started becoming more frequent, and I started seeing more of the picture of what was happening, and I started having more complete dreams about what was happening. And then they were really frequent. I really thought I was losing my mind. And I couldn't tell who the woman was. I couldn't. A lot of the women in my family looked the same. I couldn't tell who the woman was. And then about 6 months after my mom died, I was driving down the road on the way home from work, and it all just hit me. And when I'm telling you it hit me, it was like all of a sudden it was just all there in my brain. Every detail. I know exactly who it was. I know exactly what all she did to me. And it's pretty sick shit. Shit that shouldn't happen to a kid. But it was just there. All of a sudden it was there. It was there in my brain. And I knew 100% what had happened to me. And I can't forget any of it now. And it's replaced all the good memories I had with that person. Is these memories are in the way of that. And I'm all right. You don't have to express any sympathy towards me. I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm not looking for empathy on it. I have done the work on myself. Okay. And thanks to some patient people that helped me, I've done the work on myself to figure out all my feelings about it. And more to the point, I stopped the cycle. I kept my family away from it. And I warned other people who I was worried their families were going to be around it once I knew. Like I said, for a long time, I didn't know. And then one day I knew all of it. I'm not a scientist. I don't know why our brains do the things they do, but apparently it's pretty common with kids to block that kind of thing out. At least, you know, that's what my therapy people told me, and it's a pretty common thing. So. But I stopped the cycle. Didn't let it happen to my kids. Like I said, I'm not going to dwell on a lot, but I will tell you this. I'll show you this here. I'll put them right here. Here's pictures of me, school pictures of me from about 8 years old to about 13 years old. And if your kid goes from looking like this to looking like this in just a couple of years, maybe dig deep, maybe ask some questions, maybe start poking around. That's something more than just teenage angst. But you could see in those pictures the change in me. And subconsciously, I can't help but wonder if it wasn't the best summer because I felt safe with Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara. You know, if on some subconscious level, I felt so safe that summer because nothing was happening to me again. And I was able to just be a kid and have a good time and hang out with my cousin all summer. I'm very thankful for it. I'm very thankful for Shane. I'm very thankful to have a lot of those people in my life that I have since in years kind of bonded with again. I think we're going to wrap it up there. I know it's a little short this week. This wasn't necessarily that long a story, but we're going to do some comments here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about a few other things. I do got another story I want to tell you. Somebody asked me to if I had any spooky stories for Halloween. And I thought, that's fun. I'm going to tell you two little quick stories. Don't have anything to do with this story, but man, it's Halloween, right? So I'll tell you some fun little stuff about me. Are you kidding me? All right, give me just a second here. I screwed up again. I forgot to get my comments ready. I had them picked out. What in the hell happened? All right, well, no sense in trying to figure it out now. Let's make sure that sound is all the way down. Right. Sorry, I got my laptop out here to help me. And let's see. Boogity. Moon Wrecking Yard playlist. I'm excited to tell you these stories, because I tell you, I'm a scaredy cat, man. I don't do well with, like, I don't watch horror movies. I am scared of my own shadow in the dark. Not as bad these days, you know, but boy, when I was young, bro, you want to see me move? Scare me. That's well, you see me move and groove then. All right, let's go here. Bop, bop, dee, 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 dee. Oh, yeah, this is Uncle Bobby's thing. Scott Haddock, 7159. JW, thank you for the wisdom and the good vibes. I wish these were longer and not fleshed out, or more fleshed out. Thank you for putting yourself out there and sharing your human experience. Hey, man, thank you. I think everybody's got a story, and I think everybody's story is probably interesting. I'm just telling y'all mine, and it's got a lot of dips and dives and twists and turns in it, but I don't know about how much wisdom you're getting out of it, but it's a whole lot of don't do shit like this. Let's see. At Eva Vargo 379, when you said that about the woods in East Texas, it made me think of R.E. Howard's poem, Cimmeria. Whether he's talking about Conan's home or his own is a little ambiguous. It was a gloomy land that seemed to hold all winds and clouds and dreams that shunned the sun. I like that. That's pretty cool. I might have to look that up. Yeah, that's the Pine Curtain, man. When you get deep off in the Pine Woods, East Texas, granted, there's a bunch of subdivisions and crap out there now, but when I was a kid, it was just miles and miles and miles of dark. Like, even in July, I mean, you could walk out there underneath that canopy and be cool, you know? And you're walking on pine needles, everything was soft, and you could get off in the woods, and it was just daggum near dark. You damn near needed a flashlight in some places off of them woods. You got deep enough off in there. I don't know if there's places like that left. I hope so. I'd like to experience it again, you know? Let's see. Hey, Mary Margaret. What's up, kitty kitty? She's still unsure about me. She likes coming to the garage. Look here. All right. Sorry, guys. Should have had that ready. That stump hole 8217. What kind of coat do you want, Dr. Pepper? I thought that was only North Carolina talk, but I know exactly what you... Yeah, that was our thing growing up. Well, everything was Coke, man. Hey, you want Coke? Yeah. What kind? That's the question. That's how you do it. I still, to this day, if you come to my house, say, hey, man, you want Coke? Yeah, what kind? Oh, that's good coffee. All right, let's go back here. Yeah, sorry to drop another bomb, but it's going to come back into play later. But like I said, I'm fine. It took me a long time to be fine, but I'm fine these days. But got a low tolerance for that kind of thing. Of course, always thank you guys for sharing your Sunday with me and sit here and listen to this. I'm really excited about Mom's Volkswagen. I don't know if there's... Woo, that car is beat to piss. I don't know what we're going to get out of it, but I'm excited about it anyways. I'm excited my cousin, they got it all drug out for me. And always appreciate you guys' feedback. And know this week's a little shorter. It wasn't quite as long a story as the others, but just kind of the way it shook out. Next week, we're going to head to 2016-2017. And we're going to learn how to fail in business. And we're also going to learn how to take a screw-in on a 6.6 Duramax LB7 piece. We're talking about the worst truck deal I ever made. Like, you know, not the worst truck I ever owned. I told you, that was that F-250, but this was the screwing of a lifetime I took on this diesel truck. And to the point, I promise you, I will probably never ever buy a diesel again in my life. I took such a beating on that damn truck. If it hadn't been for the fact, you know what? I'll tell you about it next week. I did want to tell you a couple of stories. So I tell you, I'm scared. I'm a scaredy cat, bro. I love Halloween and having fun and all that good stuff, but I don't go in for horror movies. I never seen any of the Nightmare on Elm Street. I never seen any of the Jason movies. I never watched any of that shit. It's not my thing. I saw a movie when I was a kid that scared the piss out of me called The Amityville Horror, and that all turned out to be a bunch of bullcrap. And then I saw another movie when I was about 12 or 11 that really jacked me up called The Lady in White. And that movie, like, really screwed me. Like, I don't do horror movies. I don't like being scared. I don't like it. I told y'all the story about in Billy's Trailer House where they scared me in the dark and I ran through a wall. I told you about taking a girl on the first date to a haunted house and getting scared and running her into a wall. I am not bullshitting you. I am a terrified person, and especially was back then. Now, these days, I can get out here in the dark and it don't bother me as much. And some of that's just age and wisdom, and some of that's just losing people. And once I realized my mother didn't come back to haunt me, I don't believe in ghosts anymore. Because if anybody would have ever come haunted anybody, that woman would be on my doorstep every night telling me what and what not to do. And so when that didn't happen, it kind of shook my belief in all that kind of crap. But when I was young, I was scared of haints and all that sort of thing. I also didn't want to look like a wuss. And 1 year, so back in Houston, they used to have this Houston way back. I don't even remember how old this hospital was, but it's called the Jefferson Davis Hospital, named after, you know, Jefferson Davis. And it was over off, I don't even remember the street now. But where it was, right behind it, was the Houston Fire Department. But this old hospital had been closed. Now it's like they turned it into artist lofts and some kind of thing and fixed it all up. But for years, 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 it sat empty. And you could go out there and look on ghost sites and ghost hunting sites. It was one of the biggest sites in the southern United States. People loved coming to Jefferson. The ghost hunters would come to Jefferson Davis Hospital and tried to catch apparitions and stuff. And 1 year on Halloween, I think probably somewhere around 2002, I had that Ford F-150, that 93. Melissa, and for a while Melissa was, we didn't get to this yet, but for a while Melissa was gay. I had a partner named Karen. And Melissa and Karen drove a H3 Hummer or H2 Hummer, and they had a mold control business. And they talked me into sneaking into Jefferson Davis Hospital one night on Halloween night in dark. And I wasn't the guy, but I was the only one with a flashlight. And most of it went. So when you walked up in the first part of the hospital, you had to get behind a fence and sneak off in there. But what happened is way back in the 80s, they were doing a maintenance project on this hospital, and they found all kind of, turns out that was a Civil War cemetery and an Oddfellows cemetery and then a Forgotten People cemetery. And then they built the hospital on it and never moved the graves. So I had all these bodies of people buried. Like, I think it was like 5,000 bodies were buried underneath this hospital. And the years while the hospital was open, people would see apparitions. They would see Confederate soldiers wandering up and down the hallways, and ghosts and haints of all sorts of type, and poltergeist type shit was always reported about this hospital. And we had read all this crap, and we snuck off in there. And like I said, I had the flashlight until gals behind me. Most of the above ground floor wasn't that sketchy. There's old hospital beds from the 40s and 30s. And, you know, there's a bunch of graffiti. You can tell kids have been in there acting up and everything. And when you go up into the upstairs up in the tower, it was kind of like that too, except up there, all the graffiti got demonic. It was all a bunch of pentagrams and just kind of, you know, just kids. Don't know what they're doing, but if they're doing that kind of stuff. And it was kind of sketch, you know, but it's getting dark. Melissa said she'd had enough of it. She wanted, when our cars were parked outside, she had enough of it. She didn't want to do anymore. She wanted to get out of there. And I wanted to get out of there too, but Karen wanted to go down. There was a basement level, a subfloor level. Karen wanted to go down in that subfloor. And I wasn't coming off my flashlight. So I agreed to go down in that subfloor with Karen. Karen was a pretty heavy set gal, pretty big old gal, beefy fella. Lady, and Karen boy came back. Let me have a flashlight. I want to look something. No, I ain't coming off the damn flashlight. And we get down to the subfloor, and it gets real damn creepy. First of all, there's about an inch of water on the floor because it's flood. It's Houston. You should never have a subfloor in Houston. Second, it's all baby. That's where the nursery was, and it's all baby cribs from the 40s. And those things look creepy as shit anyways, you know? The way we used to move babies around was sketchy. And we're off in the back part of that nursery, and we hear a sound at one of the windows on the back of the hospital. And it shined a flashlight at that window, and the sound got louder, and there was a little bit of racket, and then we heard somebody holler. When we heard somebody holler, the way it echoed, it sounded like it come from in that basement. And I, once again, Karen says she turned around to look for me, and me and the flashlight was shy. I left her ass in that nursery. Gone, baby. Straight up out of that nursery. And get up there, and there is Melissa and Houston firefighters. There was no trespassing signs everywhere. And them firefighters are laughing so hard. That was them at the back window of that hospital. They were trying to scare us out of there. And the person we heard holler was they walked around the corner and Melissa saw them scared the piss out of her too. And those firefighters laughed while they wrote me that trespassing ticket. It was like $150. I had to go to court. And boy, and luckily my britches were clean by the time I got there. And they wrote Karen a ticket. And now it's artist loss. Who cares? Maybe it wasn't that good a story. The other thing I think about every Halloween is anytime you go into Home Depot now and you see the moving animatronic decorations, if you notice now, most of the time they're behind a little fence. And you have to walk over that fence, push the button to activate that decoration. And I think I am the reason for that. About 2016, 2017, I was in the Home Depot on 1488 over in Tomball. And I was going to pick up some supplies and stuff. I had guys out on a job site. And I was stressed out and tired and all the things you are at work. And I was walking through the Home Depot. And they, of course, had all their Halloween decorations out. And I had two pieces of copper tubing in my hand about this long. And I was going to look for some copper fittings. And I happened to walk by those Halloween decorations and a witch jumped out and grabbed me and cackled in my ear. And when she did, I beat the shit out of that witch. I mean, lost my cool, screaming. I think I might've cried a little bit and beat the piss out of this witch right in the middle of the Home Depot. And to the point that they called the cops on me for damaging the merchandise, and I had to sit there and try to explain to everybody what the hell happened, how I freaked out, and had to tell the story about three different times. Then, you know, of course, they looked at the camera and saw that it did scare me. I didn't just go in there looking to beat the piss out of a witch. I went in there, and the witch got me, and I beat shit out of that witch, and that witch had it coming. But I've noticed every year since then, they got a little fence around the Halloween decorations, so you can't get to them. And I think it may be because of me, unless a bunch of other Jerry Waynes in other states also flipped out and beat the piss out of witches. That's my spooky stories for Halloween. There you go. You guys are great. Love you. Tell you that all the time. I'm rooting for you. I hope you got things in your way this week. You're finding a way to get them out of your way. Hope you got people doing you wrong, treating you bad. You find a way to get them out of your way. Sometimes the best thing you can do, the one hard thing I have learned about life is family or not, if people are toxic and they're hurting you or they have hurt you, you have to cut them out. And it's the only way you're ever going to have any peace and happiness. And I have a lot of peace and happiness these days, but I have surgically cut some people out of my life. And they will remain cut out of my life for that very reason. They were toxic and they weren't good for me. And that's a hard thing to do with family. And if you ever have to do it, I hope that you can find the solace and the peace to do it quickly and quietly and go on with your life and find the happiness you need. Love you guys. Excited about next week. The LB7 is going to be fun. There's a lot of great stories about that stupid piece of shit. It's a wild time in life, dude, man. I found out, I called Shane to talk to him about this episode, tell him I was wanting to do it. I was trying to see if he had a picture of the car left, and he didn't have any the old pictures of the car, but I found out when I was talking to him that Shane still has that blasted car. He has kept that car all these years, and I think he's got an engine he's about ready to put in it. And I just pray that when he gets it all back together, he'll let me come up there to Kilgore. He'll take me for one more ride down Highway 42, pedal down with the toxic twins screaming in our ear. I bet he would. If I do, I'll video it so you guys can see it. That's it for this week. I love you. I'm JW.
Home sweet home. I was a lost child, just a punk in the streets.